It's The Record from KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman. Seattle politics have a tendency to veer to the left, and recently with a socialist city council member and a $15 an hour minimum wage, they've veered so far left they've had a little brush with radicalism. But Michael Lewis says it's just a flirtation. Lewis is the author of Century 21 City. It's an economic history of Seattle, and he says that truly radical approaches require a level of risk and discomfort that doesn't really wear too well here. Michael Lewis, welcome to The Record.
Thank you.
Well, Seattle's first real brush with radicalism, I suppose, was back in 1919. That was the general strike, 2 years after the Russian Revolution. 65,000 or so workers walked off the job. The nation watched in terror and horror. What happened after that?
Almost nothing. The strike was a sort of impulsive action that started in the shipyards. The Seattle shipyards had gotten very large during the First World War, and there were 35,000 shipyard workers, and wages had been set at a national basis. They argued that Seattle workers should get paid more than a national rate because of the higher cost of living out here. The federal government was doing all this during wartime. Mm-hmm. And so they struck, and the unions around the city, despite the urging of their leadership not to, executed a sympathy strike. The problem was no one had an end game for this. No one knew what the agenda was, really why they were doing it. So after about 4 or 5 days, it kind of petered out and everybody went back to work.
You have described what happened as kind of the push and pull between radicalism and pragmatism, another kind of battle of Seattle. People who are listening may think of the WTO. What are the forces of pragmatism that came into play then or maybe come into play now?
Well, ultimately, to get anything done, you need leaders to take votes. And the leaders of, say, the Seattle City Council, they all learn fairly quickly, no matter where they start, and mayors learn this too, that to get anything done, you need tax revenue. You need the cooperation of the business community. Cities everywhere that are successful because they have a business community and a local government and labor and community groups all working together. It sounds sort of corny, but it's really true. And there's a whole body of political theory that suggests that that's the way it works. So politicians figure that out very quickly, particularly in Seattle, where the city is heavily dependent on businesses for tax revenue.
So when you look back over the last half a century, how have the changes in the city, and there have been many changes in Seattle, how have they affected that balance between pragmatic and radical?
Not a lot. The radicals sort of pop up every once in a while. A little known fact, Seattle had the second or third chapter of the Black Panther Party back in the 1960s. The hippies took over Interstate 5, mm-hmm. And things like that. But they all sort of gravitate back. The politics was in the city for many, many years, sort of right of center. Mayors like Gordon Clinton and Dorm Braman and those people were just a little bit to the right of center, conservative, but not terribly. Then in the late 60s, it shifted to the left of center with Wes Ullman and the Czech movement. You know, people think of the Czech movement in Seattle as some sort of radical thing. It was hardly. It was run by a bunch of municipal league types, and they were hardly radical at all. They just shifted just to the other side of the spectrum.
What did Czech stand for?
Choose an effective city council. And it was a reform movement, very much in the spirit of reform movements from 100 years ago, late 19th century reform movements.
I'm talking with Michael Lewis. He's the author of Century 21 City. It's an economic history of Seattle. So what you're saying, I'm holding up my pen, if that's the center, my pen leans maybe at some points a little rightish and sometimes a little leftish, but it's not really one of those meters that goes and pins.
No, we've never had a Dennis Kucinich moment. The mayor of Cleveland, who really was way out there on the end, and did a lot of damage, frankly, to Cleveland in the process. And we've never really had that. And right now, we've been in this sort of left of center mode since the late 60s. These are very establishment people who just lead a little bit to the left.
Well, establishment until last fall, and that's when Seattleites elected socialist, self-professed socialist, Shama Sawant to city council. Just after she was elected, we talked to journalist John Nichols. He's the author of The S Word, A History of Socialism in America, and he said Seattle's relatively predictable politics provide kind of a useful backdrop for Sawant's ideas.
You had somebody come along with some very, very bold proposals, $15 minimum wage, taxing millionaires, protecting public services and public education in a very bold way, rejecting austerity. And that sounds dynamic.
Is this a cycle swinging maybe the pendulum further left than my little tilted pen?
I don't think so. I think that her election was sort of a moment in time that I doubt very much will repeat itself. A charismatic candidate running against a candidate, you know, Richard Conlon had been around a long time, and maybe people thought, okay, Richard's time is, you know, he's done his time, and we'll have somebody else. But remember, there's 9 votes in the city council, so over the years we've had all sorts of people in the city council who were didn't fit with the rest of the peas in the pod, and life goes on.
Do you think that that's really it?
Well, I think you have to separate the $15 minimum wage from the other things that she's been talking about. That's one that really got a lot of people's attention. It's got a lot of attention nationally. There's a lot of movement around that. And the mayor saw that as an opportunity for him to really do something interesting. He approached it in a very, very smart way, was able to gather at least the appearance of a strong coalition of other players and make that happen. You move to the next items down the agenda, rent control and income tax are both prohibited under state law. So you have to get past those hurdles, which I really think are pretty high.
No, just to go back to the character of the city council, Seattle City Council, over the last half century, you were talking about how maybe pragmatic Seattle Mayor Ed Murray was in co-opting Shama Sawant's idea of a minimum wage. A lot of people at the public meeting when it was approved, packed with the 15 now supporters, Sawant's stalwart army, were very upset because they didn't get everything they wanted. And they spent a lot of that meeting yelling from the audience, shame, 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 with the implications that city council was in bed with, you know, major corporate running dogs. And here was how city council member Bruce Harrell responded to that.
That's crap. That is absolutely crap. And I will say that if you want big business to listen to you, listen to business. The voice of the employee and the voice of the employer are intertwined. One cannot exist without the other.
So Bruce Harrell, Michael Lewis, says that the idea, the very suggestion that the city council serves the interests of big business is, in his words, crap. Does the city council exist to serve the business interests?
Well, I think what that reflects, first of all, Councilmember Harrell came out of business, so he's probably a little bit more sensitive than some others. But I think it also reflects what I said earlier, that successful communities and successful cities have to work closely with their employers in business. You can't be successful otherwise. Employers create jobs. You can't have happy citizenry earning anything unless you have jobs. So you have to work with them. And I think the catcalls from the audience sort of reflect the sort of worldview of a radical, which is, no, we don't compromise. We don't work. You know, we get what we want. We fight for what we want. And that's a fine thing when you're up against the wall, but we're not up against the wall here. We're trying to do something new and innovative, but we're not in a position of revolution.
Maybe some of the 15 now members would like that. You write that radicalism takes root among those who have little to lose. And in Seattle, there always has been something to lose. What are Seattleites holding on to?
Well, they're holding on to really what's a very nice life, particularly in a very nice city compared to what they could see elsewhere in many other places in the country. Seattle, jobs in Seattle have always paid well. When you're up here in the upper left-hand corner of the map, you've got to pay well. And the industries that have grown up here, the shipyards paid well during the general strike. They weren't complaining about their overall level of pay. They were paid pretty well. Boeing workers have always been paid well. Technology workers are paid well. We're paid well here. So there is a lot to lose if this economy starts to falter and the good things happening slow down. So I think people recognize they got a really good thing going here. And you can tweak it at the edges, but don't mess with it.
No rocking the boat, just to go back to those shipyard workers. Well, you're a writer, you're a public affairs consultant, but you're also a member of the Medina City Council. Just across the lake from the city that just voted in a $15 an hour minimum wage, is that something you want to see cross over to your town?
Well, we don't have very many employees. We're predominantly residential. It is an interesting question that's being raised in Bellevue, which does have about 100 and some thousand employees within the city. And you know, it will be interesting to see how it plays out, because the suburbs on the east side have been trending to the left over the years, but in an even more pragmatic way than Seattle. So I honestly don't know how this plays out on the east side. I could tell you how some individual council members in Bellevue or Kirkland may react. It'll be a much tougher sell.
So we started our conversation talking about the Seattle General Strike of 1919. This is a very different place almost 100 years since that happened. But what do you think those people would think if they could see what's going on in Seattle right now?
Well, you know, Seattle back then had actually a lot in common with today. It had grown tremendously, and it was a really thriving place. It had gone from being a sort of timber village to being a major American city within a couple of decades. And so they'd look at what's happening now and the growth and the change as something that was sort of natural, what happens out here when ambition, you know, Seattle always advertised itself 100 years ago as a place for ambitious people to come and make your mark in the world, and that's what we say today.
Michael Lewis is the author of Century 21 Cities, Seattle's 50-year journey from World's Fair to World Stage. He's writing a history of Bellevue right now. Look forward to reading that. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for the invitation.